This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Second hour of Intelligent Medicine. You can hear the full 2 hours of our program if you listen live, or if you listen to a recap that we put up on the internet at drhoffman.com. Usually around noon Monday mornings, we have it all compiled for you, so you can listen to our full program. And this hour, we're taking phone calls, 877-726-TALK. 877-726-8255. And we'll start this hour with a very interesting study on the use of a supplement called N-acetylcysteine, or NAC, in treating Parkinson's disease. You know, we've long talked about the benefits of glutathione for Parkinson's disease. It's the body's master antioxidant. And it turns out that free radical damage is responsible for the deterioration that occurs in the dopamine-producing structures of the brain that result in Parkinson's disease. And a pioneer in this field, Dr. David Perlmutter, my good colleague, who is America's preeminent neurologist, has suggested giving intravenous glutathione to patients with Parkinson's. He's got some amazing videos which show remarkable improvement. This is a therapy that we've been using in our Parkinson's patients at the Hoffman Center for, at least a dozen years. And we also supplement them with N-acetylcysteine because NAC is one of the building blocks for glutathione. Glutathione is three amino acids linked together. And N-acetylcysteine is a delivery system for cysteine, one of the crucial amino acids that builds glutathione. So researchers looked at a small group, 23 Parkinson's patients, at Thomas Jefferson University, which is a medical school hospital. And the patients were divided into two groups. The first group got oral NAC, 600 milligrams twice daily. Plus, they got weekly intravenous infusions of NAC. Now, I don't use intravenous NAC. I use intravenous glutathione. And at pretty high doses. The second group received no NAC, but they stayed on standard drug therapy for Parkinson's. And what they found was that the patients who had oral and intravenous NAC had improvements of 4 to 9% in what's called dopamine transporter binding. That's a good thing. That is important in the part of the brain that is responsible for movement. They had a 13% improvement in their what's called UPDRS scores. A UPDRS score is the Unified Parkinson's Disease Rating Scale. So I guess they rate you in terms of symptoms of Parkinson's, your ability to move, your ability to balance, and walk and so on. But the 13% improvement is significant and suggests that there was a significant correlation between changes in UPDRS scores and changes in dopamine transport binding, which were measurable in parts of the brain responsible for movement. So this is very cool and suggests there really is something to it. And by the way, this therapy was only undertaken for a short period of time. They did this for, let's see how long. I'm looking at the study here. Twice daily for a period of, and I can't find that, but Like most experiments, they can't do it for too long because not enough money and compliance is an issue. And I presume it was done for, you know, not years, but probably for weeks or a few months. And over that short period of time, there was improvement. Single-digit, low double-digit improvement, not curative. I will tell you that my patients who are getting Parkinson's disease therapy, they don't jump up and dance the jig immediately. But we are slowing the progression of their disease significantly when no other therapy appears to be curative for Parkinson's. We can deal with the symptoms. The drugs are available to sort of keep the symptoms in check. But this is among the many strategies that we use for Parkinson's patients that can slow progression of disease and keep them strong and well and mobile. All right, let's take a call now from, a couple of ways to get calls to us. One is to call us at 877-268-8255 during the show. Another way is go to our website at drhoffman.com. And if you're using a Mac or PC, not a mobile device, you'll see displayed on the right side of our homepage a little narrow black bar. If you click on the bar, it'll prompt you to enter a question that we record. And that's what Boris did a couple of weeks ago. Let's answer his question, okay?
Dr. Hoffman and Lila, Dr. Neil Bernard claims that a cutting-edge study proved that fats slow mitochondria in 3 days, resulting in fat gain. He claims that cells run on glucose. Saturated fat keeps glucose out of the cells, which prevents cellular energy production and thickens the blood flow. Also causes type 2 diabetes and Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Saturated and trans fats are both apparently equally bad. Is this a flawed study? What is your opinion on this?
Yeah, I don't know the study that he's referring to, but I will tell you this, is that Neil Barnard is a dyed-in-the-wool proponent of veganism. And as such, I don't really think he takes a balanced view of the science. I think he's an ideologue. And, you know, this is controversial. And there, you know, it's kind of, you know, expression, the devil can quote scriptures to his purpose, is you can take snippets of information from both sides of this argument. It's like a political argument at this point, because, you know, you have the people who are the dyed-in-the-wool, pro-Trump people, you know, they will brook no argument. He's perfection incarnate. And then, you know, the people on the other side of the spectrum who believe he's the devil and he can do no right. And so you start with an ideological principle and you ignore some of the subtle and controversial scientific facts and you come to a conclusion which is, one-sided. And, you know, his assertion that mitochondria cannot use fat is just dead wrong. It's absolutely dead wrong because we know that there is a pathway by which mitochondria can utilize fat in times of starvation. You know, otherwise you would die immediately when your carbohydrate stores are used up. You know, the body stores carbohydrate in a very temporary depot, which is glycogen. Glycogen depots are in the liver, and they're in on the surface of muscles. And within, you know, anywhere from 24 to 48 hours, your glycogen depots are exhausted if you're not consuming any food and or if you're on zero carbohydrates. So you would die, right? I mean, you need the mitochondria to your brain, your heart to function. But people don't die when they're starved or when they're on a no-carbohydrate or ketogenic diet. They subsist on what are called ketone bodies. And ketone bodies are a fuel that's derived from fat. And you can get the fat from two sources. One source is from burning down your own fat stores. And of course, when your fat stores are exhausted, then you have to break down your protein, which is bad because you get, you lose your muscle. Well, that's not desirable. But you can also, on a very low-carb diet, burn dietary fat, and that gets converted into usable ketones, which the mitochondria can use. And so, you know, I don't know where he's cherry-picking the data, but, you know, it may be that for some people under some circumstances, lots of saturated fat is not good. Most studies are exonerating saturated fat these days. But for someone who's already committed themselves to a vegan viewpoint, he will brook no information that goes contrary to his beliefs. And I got to say, you know, to give myself a little credit on this, is that I started my career in nutrition as a vegan. I was a macrobiotic vegan. I was taught that fat was to be kept to a minimum. Yeah, you could use a little, you know, like a little tiny dab of sesame oil or something like that. But don't eat a lot of fat. Eat lots of whole grains, brown rice, seaweed, tofu. But don't have any animal products whatsoever. Okay, maybe sprinkle some bonita flakes into your miso, you know, for flavoring, but don't eat any animal protein. And I did that for many, many years. And then I started to look at the science, and I kind of flipped the switch on that and found that, you know, while macrobiotics was beneficial for some patients under some circumstances, that for the vast majority of people, a better way to go is a Mediterranean diet, or for patients desirous of weight loss, a low-carb diet is preferable. So it is, you know, what he's citing is scientific gobbledygook. It's not correct. It's just to muster the argument that carbohydrates are the preferred source of fuel for the body and we should eat no fat, which is what, you know, he's already decided upon. And it's an unshakable faith, like a religious belief among some people in the scientific community that their viewpoint is right. And I try to be balanced and scientific about it. My examination of both sides of this argument have led me to the conclusion that animal protein and a relatively low-carb diet is appropriate. But in a moment, when we come back, I'll share with you the results of a study that show that a diet that's relatively low in fat and relatively high in carbohydrates can be very beneficial for heart health and longevity when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Stop breathing right now. No, really, hold your breath. This is how it feels when you're stuffed up due to colds, flu, pollen, dander, post-nasal drip, or any other reason. That's when you need clear saline nasal spray, the only spray with the power of xylitol. That simple saline solution you're using is only doing half the job. It's just rinsing. In multiple research studies, xylitol has been shown to reduce bacterial adhesion and help keep your nose moist and clean much longer than saline alone, making Clear more effective at washing away that nasty gunk in your nose. Clear is so powerful, it's been granted over 11 patents. So step up from that wimpy saline spray to something that actually works faster and better at getting you the relief you need to start breathing now. And if your doctor isn't talking to you about Clear for your congestion, maybe you need to get a new doctor. You don't just rinse your hands, why would you just rinse your nose? Clear saline nasal spray with xylitol. Available at Walmart, CVS, Whole Foods, Rite Aid, and everywhere else. Or clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Now go wash your nose.
You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. You can find a lot more on Intelligent Medicine at drhoffman.com. Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine podcast and automatically get a new episode 5 days a week. And please rate and review the podcast on iTunes to help us spread the word about Intelligent Medicine. Also go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. Finally, become a patient at the Hoffman Center. I'll personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the intelligent medicine principles you hear about on the radio show and podcast, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Thanks for listening and for helping to spread the word about Intelligent Medicine.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And, you know, we answered a question earlier about, you know, whether a low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet is more beneficial than a diet that is laden with fat. And this is a controversial proposition, to say the least. And there are a lot of people who embrace the paleo diet, which is our ancestral diet. And this is actually a diet that I've been following a version of, which is called the Whole 30 for the past, oh, it's been now 15 months or so. And I find it very beneficial for energy, for athletic performance, for weight. I virtually effortlessly dropped 8 pounds. And have no trouble maintaining my weight, although I eat a ton of food. And it's not an ultra-low-carb diet, but it can be if weight loss is desired. A lot of people think that the paleo diet is chock-full of meat. lots of beef and pork and lamb and ancestral meats like venison and buffalo or bison. And it depends really on what paleo culture you're talking about. There's a study of one of the few remaining paleo cultures in the world in The Lancet this month. The Lancet, the world's leading medical journal. And the headline is, Indigenous South American group has healthiest arteries of all populations yet studied, providing clues to healthy lifestyle. Fascinating study. An 80-year-old from the Chimane tribe has the same vascular age as an American in their mid-50s, suggests a new report. The Chimane people are a forager population. They're hunter-gatherers, and they farm, you know, the rudimentary farming. They raise a few crops in the Bolivian Amazon. They have the lowest reported levels of vascular aging for any population in the world. They have the least risk of coronary atherosclerosis. It's five times less common in the U.S., according to research. And how do they do this? Well, they study these folks, and they did a test, which I like to do for my patients, the Hoffman Center. When we want to consider the question, should a person be on a statin? Is their cholesterol too high? Does it matter? We'll do an EBT calcium score and find out if they're beginning to form calcium plaque in their arteries. That's where the rubber meets the road, and sometimes people with enormously high cholesterol don't have any plaque, and sometimes people with relatively low cholesterol have tons of plaque. It depends. So cholesterol is not even a good indicator of your likelihood of cardiovascular disease, it turns out. I was happy to see I finally got around, after recommending this test to hundreds of patients, I finally got around to doing the test myself at the tender age of 64, and I had some trepidation, like, oh my goodness, what if I have plaque? And I did it, and sat there in a waiting room for a few minutes, crossed my fingers, tried to think pleasant thoughts, and they came back and told me that I had a zero score. I was very happy. So this is, in this study of these indigenous South American tribe, they found that they have virtually no coronary artery plaque. 13% had low risk, and 9 in 10 had no risk of heart disease. According to them, they had zero plaque, no matter what their age, which is a remarkable finding. These findings, they say, continue into old age, were almost two-thirds. 65% of those aged over 75 had no risk. Just 8% had moderate or high risk. These results are the lowest reported levels of vascular aging of any population recorded to date. And in a moment, I'm going to share with you what their secret is, what type of diet they followed. Yes, they are paleo, but the question is, what constitutes paleo? We'll find out in just a moment about this population in the Bolivian Amazon. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Do your probiotics have baggage? They should. You see, if your probiotics do not include prebiotics as well as postbiotics, then you are missing out on a lot of healthy benefits. Most probiotic products do not contain prebiotics, their food, or postbiotics, the organic matter that promotes the long-term colonization of the good versus bad bacteria in your body. But Dr. O'Hara's probiotics does. Select live probiotic bacteria are blended with fruits, vegetables, seaweed, and herbs, and allowed to grow over 3 years to assure superior digestive and immune support. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics then combines this rich culture medium, prebiotics, and the resulting nutrients from this fermentation process, postbiotics, providing you with a superior probiotic supplement. No other probiotic can offer your body this support, so switch to the best premium probiotic on your retailer shelf today. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics, available at fine health food stores. Don't accept a substitute.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. I was telling you about earlier about the first study of its kind looking at the arteries of indigenous tribespeople in South America, in the Amazon jungle.
the Chimani tribe. And what they found is that on average, the arteries of an 80-year-old Chimani are healthier than the arteries of the average 50-year-old American. And so what is their secret? They say, although the Chimani lifestyle is very different from that of contemporary U.S. society, certain elements of it are transferable and could help to reduce the risk of heart disease. So what is their formula? And this harkens back to a trip that I took a few years back to the Museum of Natural History here in New York. It's one of my favorite places ever since I've been a kid. It's just a wondrous place where, you know, it was the first time I ever looked at giant dinosaur skeletons. It's just a place where every kid in the world should be allowed to roam around and wonder at the marvels in that museum. And so I found my way into part of the museum where they looked at South American ethnography. I'm an anthropology major, so that is a turf that's familiar to me because I studied it in college. And they had a little video that they were running of what it was like for one of these tribes in the Amazon basin to go hunting for food. And it was a video of a boy and his father who were hunting in the jungle with blow darts. They had these long hollow tubes with darts that are poison. They paralyze the prey. And the prey of these hunters was monkeys, who roam around high in the treetops in the jungle, in the canopy of the trees that are in the rich, lush Amazon jungle. And so the kid was maybe 8 or 9, and the father was teaching his kid how to hunt for monkeys with the blow darts. So he let the kid fire the blow dart at a monkey that was maybe 40, 50 feet above in the tree canopy. And the kid, not as accomplished a hunter as his father, I guess just winged the monkey. And the monkey was there kind of sort of tremulously hanging out in the tree canopy, not felled by the poison dart, just sort of stunned. And so the father looked up, and they're near naked. So he was standing there, and he just looked like one of those Greek statues, you know, virtually no body fat, amazing musculature. And he began to shimmy up that tree, just, you know, with tremendous ease, just went up to the top of the canopy, dislodged the monkey. The monkey fell down, and then they tied up the monkey and brought the monkey back to the village for the women to prepare in a big stew pot. And then they, in a caption, they revealed that, no, this was not the father. This was the grandfather of this little boy. So presumably, you know, do the math, this guy was at least in his 40s, possibly in his 50s, and looked amazing. And so that is a type of lifestyle that indeed is very different than our lifestyle. But what do they eat? Are they on a paleo diet, as is often construed here in the U.S., that is high in grass-fed beef, you know, big, thick, organic porterhouse steaks? It turns out not. Their diet is largely carbohydrate-based, 72%, and includes all non-processed carbohydrates. No whole grain bagels, no Cheerios, high-fiber carbohydrates, such as plantain, manioc, nuts, and fruits. Protein, relatively low. Yeah, they get lucky sometimes. They get a pig or a monkey. It constitutes 14% of the diet. It comes from animal meat. And the diet is also very low in fat, with fat comprising just 14% of the diet. And that's not a lot of fat. But the key is the level of exercise. Industrial populations are sedentary for more than half of their waking hours, 54%. That would be us, sometimes more. The Chimani spend only 10% of their daytime being inactive. So their lifestyle involves continuous hunting, gathering, fishing, and farming.
men spend an average of 6 to 7 hours of their day running around in the jungle, hunting, and the women 4 to 6 hours working in food preparation, mostly, and in making clothes and working on shelter, doing household chores, and like taking the clothes, what little they have, and going down the river and pounding it on rocks. So there are no microwaves, there's no TV dinners, there's no fast food, and that is a lifestyle which results in the remarkable freedom from heart disease that the Tsamani experience. And so people who simplistically try to distill it into, okay, eat this protein bar, it's a paleo bar, are missing the essence of the lifestyle picture, which yields beneficial results in terms of cardiovascular disease. Also, freedom from pollution, freedom from, to some degree, the kind of stresses that we may experience on a nonstop basis, although there are plenty of stresses when you face wild animals, disease, and starvation. This is a very different picture than what we experience in the West. All right, let's take a call now, one of our recorded calls, from Peter. Can we have that, please?
Hi, my name is Peter Rodriguez, and I'm taking a few vitamin B12, fish oil, and oregano, two from Dr. Hoffman. And one little problem that I have, my red cell, they're not normal. My red cell, I believe, they're like 50-something, which is very low. And I want to know what kind of vitamin do I need to increase the volume of my red cell. And tell me how dangerous it is having a normal red cell in the blood. Thank you. God bless you for your help.
Okay, thank you. And so, interesting question. And what I think this caller is referring to is something called the MCV, or mean corpuscular volume, which is a measurement of the size of your red blood cells. Now, normally, doctors wouldn't point to this as a problem. It's a variation on the theme. And some patients have a high MCV, and that can sometimes be a clue to B12 or folic acid or folate deficiency. What it means is that the red blood cells are large, and that's usually the case with what are called immature red blood cells. When they don't survive very long, the red blood cells sometimes are large on average. And so the MCV sometimes gives clues to that if it's high. And if it's low, it might be an iron deficiency anemia. But a 50 is pretty low. You know, even a 70 or 80 would be considered indication of iron deficiency anemia. These are what are called microcytes, or very small red blood cells. And so that could easily be revealed with a blood test for ferritin, which, you know, your doctor might have been alerted to by the low MCV, but apparently you have normal blood counts and no iron deficiency. It's just the size of the cell is low. So I have a theory, and, you know, I'd need to know more about you. But, you know, it sounds, you know, I'm a little bit of an aficionado when it comes to discerning accents. It sounds like you have a, you know, Latin American or Latino accent. That suggests that you might have inherited a gene is common in the Mediterranean part of the world, that is responsible for a small size of red blood cells. And initially, this evolved as a hedge against malaria. It's akin in some ways to sickle cell, but not as damaging or dangerous, sometimes referred to as thalassemia minor. And people with this sometimes are slightly anemic and have small red blood cells. But from what you tell me, I can only guess that is the case. And when it comes to nutrients that may enlarge your red blood cells, well, when I have patients with thalassemia, I give them antioxidant nutrients. I give them more vitamin E and things like pycnogenol and perhaps N-acetylcysteine to protect the cells from damage, because those cells sometimes are susceptible to damage more easily under conditions of stress. On the other hand, if you have thalassemia, you don't want to take a lot of iron, because actually iron overload is more common in patients with thalassemia. And you have to be careful about iron supplementation. The iron doesn't end up raising the blood count. It's poorly utilized and ends up getting deposited in tissues in the body. So that's, I think, you know, I'd have to look more carefully at your records. I think that's what's going on with you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and before we break, I want to share with you once again the information about the Zona Plus. It's an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. The Zona Plus is a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective that it works for 9 in 10 people. We've been recommending it to both listeners and patients and getting great feedback. Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. And there are at least 22 clinical studies that confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. That's 888-408-6141. Or tryzona.com. And as a listener to Intelligent Medicine, we set something up for you. The company is offering you $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout. It's really been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation, the Zona Plus. Find out about it at tryzona.com. We'll be right back. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Stop breathing right now. No, really, hold your breath. This is how it feels when you're stuffed up due to colds, flu, pollen, dander, postnasal drip, or any other reason. That's when you need clear saline nasal spray, the only spray with the power of xylitol. That simple saline solution you're using is only doing half the job. It's just rinsing. In multiple research studies, xylitol has been shown to reduce bacterial adhesion and help keep your nose moist and clean much longer than saline alone, making Clear more effective at washing away that nasty gunk in your nose. Clear is so powerful, it's been granted over 11 patents. So step up from that wimpy saline spray to something that actually works faster and better at getting you the relief you need to start breathing now. And if your doctor isn't talking to you about Clear for your congestion, maybe you need to get a new doctor. You don't just rinse your hands, why would you just rinse your nose? Clear saline nasal spray with xylitol. Available at Walmart, CVS, Whole Foods, Rite Aid, and everywhere else. Or clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Now go wash your nose.
Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman for Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA, and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. They source only the highest quality, deep, cold water fish using traditional, sustainable methods. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and 28 of their fish oils have received the highest 5-star rating from the International Fish Oil Standards Program. Carlson is the number one selling liquid fish oil brand in the United States. Carlson's award-winning omega-3 nutritional supplements are available in soft gels and liquid form for those who have trouble swallowing supplements or who prefer this delivery method. For more information, go to CarlsonLabs.com. CarlsonLabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And some great podcasts this week. We talked about the health benefits of sex with Dr. Lindsay Berkson. She's written a great book on that subject. And yeah. It's really part of the equation. And we talked to Dr. Stefan Gane about the hungry brain and why it is that in spite of our best efforts, we tend to overeat. There are so many biological mechanisms that conspire to make us put on the pounds, and he studied them, and we discussed them in a great podcast that you can download at drhoffman.com. So check it out. We got lots more information available for you. It's part of our Intelligent Medicine portfolio of health news. You can get it by subscribing via iTunes or Stitcher, your favorite podcast delivery service, or you can individually download them from drhoffman.com. While you're at it, sign up for our newsletter there. All right. Had a woman come and see me. 77 years old, high cholesterol, she just had a stroke. And of course,
and this is what they tend to do. She was put on a statin medication for prevention, and I couldn't get in the way of that because, unfortunately, studies do show that there is a protective effect that's slight but significant in individuals who suffered strokes who then go on to use a statin for prevention. And so she came back, and we saw some very good news in terms of her cholesterol dramatically improved. She'd also improved her diet, of course, and we lowered her homocysteine. Homocysteine was very high at 16. We halved it. It went down to 7 point something. And, of course, homocysteine is a risk factor for stroke, so maybe that, too, was something that needed to be optimized to reduce her risk going forward. But a disturbing trend occurred. We found that her blood sugar went up. Well, it was slightly elevated before, but her blood sugar was in the pre-diabetic range. And I asked her, did your diet get worse? And she said, no, in fact, it's been better. And so in light of that finding, I'll share with you this new study. Older women taking statins face higher risk of diabetes. Research done in Australia, and this is not the first time this has been documented. It was found recently that there was a slightly higher risk of diabetes in women taking statins, but how severe that risk was not realized until this study at the University of Queensland in Australia. They found that almost 50% of women in their late 70s and 80s in the study who took statins, of them, 5% were diagnosed with new onset diabetes. And so what studies have revealed is that for some reason or another, it's not clear why, statins may change the way that the body responds to insulin. Now, another possible explanation for that is that for some individuals given statins, they feel that they've been firewalled against the adverse effects of a harmful diet. So they can eat like a house on fire, and they figure, hey, you know, my cholesterol is going to be low no matter what I eat. And while they don't develop high cholesterol, because the statin's lowering their cholesterol, that over-the-top diet may cause them to move towards diabetes. It's unclear which is most responsible for this effect. But in the study at University of Queensland, it wasn't just a 5% higher risk or a 10% higher risk. There was a 33% higher chance of developing diabetes if they were taking statins. The risk increased to 51% for those on high doses of statins. So it's not uncommon these days to see people on 80 milligrams of Lipitor. 80 milligrams, the maximal dose that could be given. The lowest dose is 10. The risk increased to 51% for those on high doses. And the problem is that when they evaluate these drugs, they mostly look at 40 to 70-year-old men in the test group. So they have no idea what the, you know, they say they prove the drugs and based on studies done on men, and then they unleash them on women. And in case you haven't noticed, women are different than men and may respond differently. So caution flag on statin dosing for women over 70, 75. And in fact, for most of these women, statins really are not effective anyway. Here's an item, and I'm watching, you know, in the background, got the TV on in the studio, watching the NCAA finals, you know, the brackets, March Madness. And there's lots of college athletes out there pounding the boards. This study on college football athletes, more than half of college football athletes have inadequate levels of vitamin D. You might say, so what? Well, they eat lousy and they don't take vitamins, so of course, and it's winter. But it turns out that vitamin D deficiency is linked to muscle injuries. In these football players, they did a survey. They found that half of these athletes, average age 22, had low levels of vitamin D. 59% were found to have an abnormal serum vitamin D level, and 10% had a severe deficiency. And what they say is that there can be a significantly higher prevalence of lower extremity muscle strain and core muscle injury in those who had low vitamin D levels. We know that vitamin D is important for so many functions in the body.
And it may have an effect on muscle strength and susceptibility to injury. Interesting correlation, not only bone fractures, but muscle injury. And hey, how easy would it be to give these college athletes a little bit of vitamin D? And how much better for their athletic performance and for staying in the brackets? I hope some of those NCAA athletes are doing some of that as they proceed to the Final Four. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. Have yourselves a great weekend. This is Intelligent Medicine.